from Father's Day. I hadn't quite known what to do with it, so I could allow myself this gesture. The merchant beamed and thanked me so profusely that he slobbered all over himself. He must have boasted about his adventure somewhere, because not 2 weeks had gone by when another merchant appeared. He had a pretty large bag ready with him, and a daughter, also pretty large.
Nivellen extended his legs under the table and stretched until the armchair creaked.
"I came to an understanding with the merchant in no time," he continued. "He'd leave her with me for a year. I had to help him load the sack onto his mule. He wouldn't have managed by himself."
"And the girl?"
"She had fits at the sight of me for a while. She really thought I'd eat her. But after a month, we were eating at the same table, chatting and going for long walks. She was kind and remarkably smart, and I'd get tongue-tied when I talked to her. You see, Geralt, I was always shy with girls, always made a laughing-stock of myself, even with wenches from the cowshed with dung up to their knees. Girls, the lads from the crew, turned over this way and that at will. Even they made fun of me. To say nothing of having a maw like this. I couldn't even make myself say anything about why I had paid so dearly for a year of her life. The year dragged like the stench following marauding troops, until at last the merchant arrived and took her away. I locked myself in the house, resigned, and didn't react for several months to any of the guests who turned up with daughters. But after a year spent with company, I realized how hard it was to live without anyone to talk to.
The monster made a noise which was supposed to be a sigh, but came out more like a hiccup.
"The next one," he said after a while, "was called Fenn. She was small, bright and chirpy, a real goldcrest. She wasn't frightened of me at all. Once, on the anniversary of my first haircut, my coming of age, we'd both drunk too much mead, and straight after, I jumped out of bed and ran to the mirror. I must admit, I was disappointed and despondent. The trap was the same as it ever was, if with a slightly more stupid expression. And they say the wisdom of ages is to be found in fairy tales. It's not worth a shit, wisdom like that, Geralt. Well, Fenner quickly tried to make me forget my worries. She was a jolly girl, I tell you. Do you know what she thought up? We'd both frighten unwanted guests. Imagine, a guest like that enters the courtyard, looks around, and then, with a roar, I charge at him on all fours, with Fenner completely naked, sitting on my back and blowing my grandfather's hunting horn.
Nivellen shook with laughter, the white of his fangs flashing.
"Fenner," he continued, "stayed with me for a year, then returned to her family with a huge dowry. She was preparing to marry a tavern owner, a widower."
"Carry on, Nivellen. This is interesting."
"You think so?"
said the monster, scratching himself between the ears with a rasping sound.
"All right. The next one, Primula, was the daughter of an impoverished knight. The knight, when he got here, had a skinny horse, a rusty cuirass, and incredible debts. He was as hideous as cow dung, I tell you, Geralt, and spread a similar smell. Primula, I'd wager my right hand, was conceived while he was at war, as she was quite pretty. I didn't frighten her, either, which isn't surprising, really, as compared to her parent, I might have appeared quite comely. She had, as it turned out, quite a temperament, and I, having gained some self-confidence, seized the moment by the horns. After 2 weeks, Primula and I already had a very close relationship. She liked to pull me by the ears and shout, 'Bite me to death, you animal!' and 'Tear me apart, you beast!' and other equally idiotic things. I ran to the mirror in the breaks. But just imagine, Geralt, I looked at myself with growing anxiety. Less and less did I long to return to my former shape. You see, Geralt, I used to be a weakling, and now I'd become a strapping fellow. I'd keep getting ill, I'd cough, my nose would run, but now I don't catch anything. And my teeth, you wouldn't believe how rotten my teeth had been. And now I can bite through the leg of a chair. Do you want me to bite a chair leg?
No, I don't. Maybe that's good.
The monster opened his mouth wide.
My showing off used to amuse the girls, and there aren't many whole chairs left in the house.
Nivellen yawned, his enormous tongue rolling up into a tube.
This talking has made me tired, Geralt. Briefly, there were two after Primula, Ilka and Venemira. Everything happened in the same way, to the point of boredom. First, a mixture of fear and reserve, then a thread of sympathy, reinforced by small but precious gifts, then,
bite me, eat me up.
Daddy's return, a tender farewell, and an increasingly discernible depletion of the treasury. I decided to take longer breaks to be alone. Of course, I'd long ago stopped believing that a virgin's kiss would transform the way I looked, and I'd come to terms with it. And what's more, I'd come to the conclusion that things were fine as they were, and that there wasn't any need for changes.
Really? No changes, Nivellen.
It's true. I have a horse's health, which came with the way I look, for one. Secondly, my being different works on girls like an aphrodisiac. They laugh. I'm certain that as a human, I'd have to give a mighty good chase to get at a girl like, for example, Venemira, who was an extremely beautiful maid. I don't suppose she'd have glanced twice at the fellow in the portrait. And thirdly, safety. Father had enemies, and a couple of them had survived. People whom the crew, under my pitiful leadership, had sent to their graves, had relatives. There's gold in the cellar. If it wasn't for the fear inspired by me, somebody would come and get it, if only peasants with pitchforks.
You seem quite sure, Geralt remarked, playing with an empty chalice, that you haven't offended anyone in your present shape. No father, no daughter, no relative or daughter's betrothed.
Leave off, Geralt.
Nivellen was indignant.
What are you talking about? The fathers couldn't contain themselves for joy. I told you, I was incredibly generous. And the daughters? You didn't see them when they got here in their dresses of sackcloth, their little hands raw from washing, their shoulders stooped from carrying buckets. Even after 2 weeks with me, Primula still had marks on her back and thighs from the strap her knightly father had beaten her with. They walked around like princesses here, carried nothing but a fan, and didn't even know where the kitchen was. I dressed them up and covered them with trinkets. At the click of a finger, I'd conjure up hot water in the tin bath father had plundered for my mother at Asengard. Can you imagine? A tin bath? There's hardly a regent, what am I saying, hardly a lord who's got a tin bath at home. This was a house from a fairy tale for them, Geralt, and as far as bed is concerned, well, pox on it, virtue is rarer today than a rock dragon. I didn't force any of them, Geralt.
But you suspected someone had paid me to kill you. Who would have?
A scoundrel who wanted the contents of my cellar but didn't have any more daughters.
Nivellen said emphatically.
Human greed knows no limits.
And nobody else.
And nobody else.
They both remained silent, gazing at the nervous flicker of the candle flames. Nivellen, said the Witcher suddenly, are you alone now?
Witcher, answered the monster, after a moment's hesitation, I think that, in principle, I ought to insult you. Take you by the neck and throw you down the stairs. Do you know why? Because you treat me like a dimwit. I noticed how you've been cocking your ears and glancing at the door. You know perfectly well that I don't live alone. Am I right?
You are. I'm sorry.
Pox on your apologies. Have you seen her?
Yes, in the forest by the gate. Is she why merchants and daughters have been leaving here empty-handed for some time?
So, you know about that too? Yes, she's the reason. Do you mind if I ask whether... Yes, I do mind.
Silence again. Oh, well, it's up to you, the Witcher finally said, getting up. Thanks for your hospitality, dear host. Time I was on my way.
Quite right.
Nivellen also got up.
For certain reasons, I can't offer you a room in the manor for the night, and I don't encourage you to spend the night in these woods. Ever since the area's been deserted, it's been bad at night here. You ought to get back to the highway before dusk.
I'll bear that in mind, Nivellen. Are you sure you don't need my help? The monster looked at him askance.
You think you could help me? You'd be able to lift this from me?
I wasn't only thinking about that sort of help.
You didn't answer my question. Although, you probably did. You wouldn't be able to.
Geralt looked him straight in the eyes. You had some bad luck, he said. Of all the temples in Gelibol and the Nimnar Valley, you picked the church of Coram Ag Tera, the lion-headed spider. In order to lift the curse thrown by the priestess of Coram Ag Tera, you need knowledge and powers which I don't possess.
And who does?
So, you are interested after all. You said things were fine as they are.
As they are, yes, but not as they might be. I'm afraid that...
What are you afraid of? The monster stopped at the door to the room and turned.
I've had enough of your questions, Witcher, which you keep asking instead of answering mine. Obviously, you've got to be asked in the right way. Listen. For some time now, I've had hideous dreams. Maybe the word monstrous would be more accurate. Am I right to be afraid? Briefly, please.
Have you ever had muddy feet after waking from such a dream? Conifer needles in your sheets?
No. And have no. Briefly, please.
You're rightly afraid.
Can anything be done about it? Briefly, please.
No.
Finally. Let's go. I'll see you out.
In the courtyard, as Geralt was adjusting the saddlebags, Nivellen stroked the mare's nostrils and patted her neck. Roach, pleased with the caress, lowered her head.
Animals like me, boasted the monster, and I like them too. My cat, Glutton, ran away at the beginning, but she came back later. For a long time, she was the only living creature who kept me company in my misfortune. Verena too.
He broke off with a grimace. Geralt smiled. Does she like cats too?
Birds.
Nivellen bared his teeth.
I gave myself away, pox on it. But what's the harm? She isn't another merchant's daughter, Geralt, or another attempt to find a grain of truth in old folk tales. It's serious. We love each other. If you laugh, I'll sock you one.
Geralt didn't laugh. You know your Verena, he said, is probably a Rusalka.
I suspected as much. Slim, dark. She rarely speaks, and in a language I don't know. She doesn't eat human food. She disappears into the forest for days on end, then comes back. Is that typical?
More or less. The Witcher tightened Roach's girth strap. No doubt you think she wouldn't return if you were to become human.
I'm sure of it. You know how frightened Rusalkas are of people. Hardly anybody's seen a Rusalka from up close, but Verena and I. Pox on it. Take care, Geralt.
Take care, Nivellen. The Witcher prodded the mare in the side with his heel and made towards the gate. The monster shuffled along at his side.
Geralt?
Yes?
I'm not as stupid as you think. You came here following the tracks of one of the merchants who'd been here lately. Has something happened to one of them?
Yes.
The last was here 3 days ago, with his daughter. Not one of the prettiest, by the way. I commanded the house to close all its doors and shutters and give no sign of life. They wandered around the courtyard and left. The girl picked a rose from my aunt's rosebush and pinned it to her dress. Look for them somewhere else, but be careful. This is a horrible area. I told you that the forest isn't the safest of places at night. Ugly things are heard and seen.
Thanks, Nivellen. I'll remember about you. Who knows?
Maybe I'll find someone who... Maybe yes, and maybe no. It's my problem, Geralt. My life, and my punishment. I've learned to put up with it. I've got used to it. If it gets worse, I'll get used to that, too. And if it gets far worse, don't look for anybody. Come here yourself and put an end to it, as a witcher. Take care, Geralt.
Nivellen turned and marched briskly towards the manor. He didn't look round again.
Part 3. The area was deserted, wild and ominously inhospitable. Geralt didn't return to the highway before dusk. He didn't want to take a roundabout route, so he took a shortcut through the forest. He spent the night on the bare summit of a high hill, his sword on his knees, beside a tiny campfire, into which, every now and then, he threw wisps of monk's hood. In the middle of the night, he noticed the glow of a fire far away in the valley. He heard mad howling and singing, and a sound which could only have been the screaming of a tortured woman. When dawn had barely broken, he made his way there, to find nothing but a trampled glade and charred bones in still warm ashes. Something sitting in the crown of an enormous oak shrieked and hissed. It could have been a harpy or an ordinary wildcat. The witcher didn't stop to check.
Part 4. About midday, while Roach was drinking at a spring, the mare neighed piercingly and backed away, baring her yellow teeth and chewing her bit. Geralt calmed her with the sign. Then he noticed a regular ring formed by the caps of reddish mushrooms peering from the moss.
"You're becoming a real hysteric, Roach," he said. "This is just an ordinary devil's ring. What's the fuss?"
The mare snorted, turning her head towards him. The witcher rubbed his forehead, frowned and grew thoughtful. Then he leapt into the saddle, turned the horse around, and started back, following his own tracks.
"Animals like me," he muttered. "Sorry, Roach. It turns out you've got more brains than me."
Part 5. The mare flattened her ears against her skull and snorted, throwing up earth with her hooves. She didn't want to go. Geralt didn't calm her with the sign. He jumped from the saddle and threw the reins over the horse's head. He no longer had his old sword in its lizard-skin sheath on his back. Its place was filled with a shining, beautiful weapon, with a cruciform and slender, well-weighted hilt, ending in a spherical pommel made of white metal. This time, the gate didn't open for him. It was already open, just as he had left it. He heard singing. He didn't understand the words. He couldn't even identify the language. He didn't need to. The witcher felt and understood the very nature, the essence of this quiet, piercing song which flowed through the veins in a wave of nauseous, overpowering menace. The singing broke off abruptly, and then he saw her. She was clinging to the back of the dolphin in the dried-up fountain, embracing the moss-overgrown stone with her tiny hands, so pale they seemed transparent. Beneath her storm of tangled black hair shone huge, wide-open eyes the colour of anthracite. Geralt slowly drew closer, his step soft and springy, tracing a semicircle from the wall and blue rosebush. The creature, glued to the dolphin's back, followed him with her eyes, turning her petite face with an expression of longing and full of charm. He could still hear her song, even though her thin,
pale lips were held tight, and not the slightest sound emerged from them. The Witcher halted at a distance of 10 paces. His sword, slowly drawn from its black enamelled sheath, glistened and glowed above his head.
"It's silver," he said. "This blade is silver."
The pale little face did not flinch. The anthracite eyes did not change expression.
"You're so like a Rizalka," the Witcher continued calmly, "that you could deceive anyone. All the more as you're a rare bird, black-haired one. But horses are never mistaken. They recognise creatures like you instinctively and perfectly. What are you? I think you're a Moolah, or an Alpor. An ordinary vampire couldn't come out in the sun."
The corners of the pale lips quivered and turned up a little. "Nivellen attracted you with that shape of his, didn't he? You evoked his dreams. I can guess what sort of dreams they were, and I pity him." The creature didn't move. "You like birds," continued the Witcher, "but that doesn't stop you biting the necks of people of both sexes, does it? You and Nivellen, indeed. A beautiful couple you'd make. A monster and a vampire, rulers of a forest castle. You'd dominate the whole area in a flash. You, eternally thirsty for blood. And he, your guardian, a murderer at your service, a blind tool. But first, he had to become a true monster, not a human being in a monster's mask." The huge black eyes narrowed. "Where is he, black-haired one? You were singing, so you've drunk some blood. You've taken the ultimate measure, which means you haven't managed to enslave his mind. Am I right?" The black-tressed head nodded slightly, almost imperceptibly, and the corners of the mouth turned up even more. The tiny little face took on an eerie expression. "No doubt you consider yourself the lady of this manor now." A nod, this time clearer. "Are you a Moolah?" A slow shake of the head. The hiss which reverberated through his bones could only have come from the pale, ghastly, smiling lips, although the Witcher didn't see them move. "Alpor?" Denial. The Witcher backed away and clasped the hilt of his sword tighter. "That means you're..." The corners of the lips started to turn up higher and higher. The lips flew open. "A Bruxa!" the Witcher shouted, throwing himself towards the fountain. From behind the pale lips glistened white, spiky fangs. The vampire jumped up, arched her back like a leopard and screamed. The wave of sound hit the Witcher like a battering ram, depriving him of breath, crushing his ribs, piercing his ears and brain with thorns of pain. Flying backwards, he just managed to cross his wrists in the sign of heliotrope. The spell cushioned some of his impact with the wall, but even so the world grew dark, and the remainder of his breath burst from his lungs in a groan. On the dolphin's back, in the stone circle of the dried-up fountain, where a dainty girl in a white dress had sat just a moment ago, an enormous black bat flattened its glossy body, opening its long, narrow jaws wide, revealing rows of needle-like white teeth. The membranous wings spread and flapped silently, and the creature charged at the Witcher like an arrow fired from a crossbow. Geralt, with a metallic taste of blood in his mouth, shouted a spell, and threw his hand, fingers spread in the sign of Quen, out in front of him. The bat, hissing, turned abruptly, then chuckled and veered up into the air before diving down, vertically, straight at the nape of the Witcher's neck. Geralt jumped aside, slashed and missed. The bat, smoothly, gracefully drew in a wing, circled around him and attacked anew, opening its eyeless, toothed snout wide. Geralt waited, sword held with both hands, always pointed in the creature's direction. At the last moment, he jumped, not to the side, but forward, dealing a swinging cut which made the air howl. He missed. It was so unexpected that he lost his rhythm and dodged a fraction of a second too late. He felt the beast's talons tear his cheek, and a damp, velvety wing slapped against his neck. He curled up on the spot, transferred the weight of his body to his right leg, and slashed backwards sharply, missing the amazingly agile creature again. The bat beat its wings, soared up and glided towards the fountain. As the crooked claws scraped against the stone casing, the monstrous, slobbering snout was already blurring, morphing, disappearing,
although the pale little lips which were taking its place couldn't quite hide the murderous fangs. The Bruxa howled piercingly, modulating her voice into a macabre tune, glared at the Witcher with eyes full of hatred, and screamed again. The sound wave was so powerful it broke through the sign. Black and red circles spun in Geralt's eyes. His temples and the crown of his head throbbed. Through the pain drilling in his ears, he began to hear voices wailing and moaning, the sound of flute and oboe, the rustle of a gale. The skin on his face grew numb and cold. He fell to one knee and shook his head. The black bat floated towards him silently, opening its toothy jaws. Geralt, still stunned by the scream, reacted instinctively. He jumped up, and in a flash, matching the tempo of his movements to the speed of the monster's flight, took three steps forward, dodged, turned a semicircle, and then, quick as a thought, delivered a two-handed blow. The blade met with no resistance. Almost no resistance. He heard a scream, but this time it was a scream of pain, caused by the touch of silver. The wailing Bruxa was morphing on the dolphin's back. On her white dress, slightly above her left breast, a red stain was visible beneath a slash no longer than a little finger. The Witcher ground his teeth. The cut, which should have sundered the beast in two, had been nothing but a scratch. "Shout, vampire," he growled, wiping the blood from his cheek. "Scream your guts out, lose your strength, and then I'll slash your pretty little head off."
You will be the first to grow weak, sorcerer. I will kill you."
The Bruxa's lips didn't move, but the Witcher heard the words clearly. They resounded in his mind, echoing and reverberating as if underwater.
"We shall see," he muttered through his teeth as he walked, bent over in the direction of the fountain.
"I will kill you. I'll kill you. I'll kill you."
"We shall see."
"Verena!"
Nivellen, his head hanging low and both hands clinging to the doorframe, stumbled from the mansion. He staggered towards the fountain, waving his paws unsteadily. Blood stained the cuff of his tunic.
"Verena!"
he roared again. The Bruxa jerked her head in his direction. Geralt, raising his sword to strike, jumped towards her, but the vampire's reaction was much faster. A sharp scream and another sound wave knocked the Witcher from his feet. He tumbled onto his back and scraped against the gravel of the path. The Bruxa arched and tensed to jump, her fangs flashing like daggers. Nivellen, spreading his paws like a bear, tried to grab her, but she screamed straight into his face, throwing him back against the wooden scaffolding under the wall, which broke with a sharp crash and buried him beneath a stack of timber. Geralt was already on his feet, running, tracing a semicircle around the courtyard, trying to draw the Bruxa's attention away from Nivellen. The vampire, fluttering her white dress, scurried straight at him, light as a butterfly, barely touching the ground. She was no longer screaming, no longer trying to morph. The Witcher knew she was tired and that she was still lethal. Behind Geralt's back, Nivellen was clattering under the scaffolding, roaring. Geralt leapt to the left, executing a short moulinet with his sword to confuse the Bruxa gliding towards him, white and black, wind-blown, terrible. He'd underestimated her. She screamed. He didn't make the sign in time, flew backwards until he thumped against the wall. The pain in his spine shot all the way to the tips of his fingers, paralyzed his shoulders, cut him down at the legs. He fell to his knees. The Bruxa, wailing melodiously, jumped towards him.
"Verena!"
roared Nivellen. She turned, and Nivellen forced the sharp broken end of a 3-meter-long pole between her breasts. She didn't shout. She only sighed. The Witcher shook, hearing this sigh. They stood there. Nivellen, on wide-spread legs, was wielding the pole in both hands, one end firmly secured under his arm. The Bruxa, like a white butterfly on a pin, hung on the other end of the stake, clutching it with both hands. The vampire exhaled excruciatingly, and suddenly pressed herself hard against the stake. Geralt watched a red stain bloom on her back, on the white dress through which the broken tip emerged in a geyser of blood, hideous, almost obscene.
Nivellen screamed, took one step back, then another, retreating from her. But he didn't let go of the pole and dragged the Bruxa behind him. One more step, and he leaned back against the mansion. The end of the pole scraped against the wall. Slowly, as if a caress, the Bruxa moved her tiny hands along the stake, stretched her arms out to their full length, grasped the pole hard, and pulled on it again. Over a meter of bloodied wood already protruded from her back. Her eyes were wide open, her head flung back. Her sighs became more frequent and rhythmic, turning into a ruckling wheeze. Geralt stood, but fascinated by the scene, still couldn't make himself act. He heard words resounding dully within his skull, as if echoing around a cold, damp dungeon.
"Mine, or nobody's. I love you. Love you."
Another terrible vibrating sigh, choking in blood. The Bruxa moved further along the pole and stretched out her arms. Nivellen roared desperately, and, without letting go of the stake, tried to push the vampire as far from himself as possible. But in vain. She pulled herself closer and grabbed him by the head. He wailed horrifically and tossed his hairy head. The Bruxa moved along the pole again and tilted her head towards Nivellen's throat. The fangs flashed a blinding white. Geralt jumped. Every move he made, every step, was part of his nature. Hard learnt, automatic, and lethally sure. Three quick steps, and the third, like 100 such steps before, finished on the left leg with a strong, firm stamp. A twist of his torso, and a sharp, forceful cut. He saw her eyes. Nothing could change now. He heard the voice. Nothing. He yelled to drown the word which she was repeating. Nothing could change. He cut. He struck decisively, like hundreds of times before, with the centre of the blade, and immediately, following the rhythm of the movement, took a fourth step and half a turn. The blade, freed by the half turn, floated after him, shining, drawing a fan of red droplets in its wake. The streaming, raven-black hair floated in the air. Floated. 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 The head fell onto the gravel.
"There are fewer and fewer monsters. And I... what am I? Who's shouting? The birds. The woman in a sheepskin jacket and blue dress. The roses from Nazaire. How quiet. How empty. What emptiness within me."
Nivellen curled up in a bundle, sheltering his head in his arms and shaking with twitches and shivers, was lying in the nettles by the manor wall.
"Get up," said the Witcher.
The young, handsome, well-built man with a pale complexion, lying by the wall, raised his head and looked around. His eyes were vague. He rubbed them with his knuckles. He looked at his hands, felt his face. He moaned quietly, and putting his finger in his mouth, ran it along his gums for a long time. He grasped his face again and moaned as he touched the four bloody, swollen streaks on his cheek. He burst out, sobbing, then laughed.
"Geralt! How come? How did this... Geralt!
Get up, Nivellen. Get up and come along. I've got some medicine in my saddlebags. We both need it."
"I've no longer got... I haven't, have I? Geralt? Why?"
The Witcher helped him get up, trying not to look at the tiny hands, so pale as to be transparent,
clenched around the pole, stuck between the small breasts which were now plastered with a wet red fabric. Nivellen moaned again.
Verena!
Don't look. Let's go.
They crossed the courtyard, holding each other up, and passed the blue rosebush. Nivellen kept touching his face with his free hand.
Incredible, Geralt. After so many years. How's it possible?
There's a grain of truth in every fairy tale, said the Witcher quietly. Love and blood, they both possess a mighty power. Wizards and learned men have been racking their brains over this for years, but they haven't arrived at anything except that.
That what, Geralt?
It has to be true love.
The Voice of Reason 3.
I'm Fulwick, Count of Mern, and this knight is Tylis from Dawndal.
Geralt bowed cursorily, looking at the knights. Both wore armour and crimson cloaks, with the emblem of the White Rose on their left shoulder. He was somewhat surprised as, so far as he knew, there was no commandery of that order in the neighbourhood. Neneca, to all appearances smiling light-heartedly and at ease, noticed his surprise.
"These nobly born gentlemen," she said casually, settling herself more comfortably in her throne-like armchair, "are in the service of Duke Herivard, who governs these lands most mercifully."
"Prince!"
Tylis, the younger of the knights, corrected her emphatically, fixing his hostile pale blue eyes on the priestess.
"Prince Herivard!"
"Let's not waste time with details and titles,"
Neneca smiled mockingly.
"In my day, only those with royal blood were addressed as princes, but now, it seems, titles don't mean so much. Let's get back to our introductions, and why the Knights of the White Rose are visiting my humble temple. You know, Geralt, that the chapter is requesting investitures for the order from Herivard, which is why so many Knights of the Rose have entered his service, and a number of locals, like Tylis here, have taken vows and assumed the red cloak which becomes him so well."
"My honour."
The Witcher bowed once more, just as cursorily as before.
"I doubt it,"
the priestess remarked coldly.
"They haven't come here to honour you. Quite the opposite. They've arrived demanding that you leave as soon as possible. In short, they're here to chase you out. You consider that an honour?"
"I don't. I consider it an insult."
"The noble knights have troubled themselves for no reason," shrugged Geralt. "I don't intend to settle here. I'm leaving of my own accord without any additional incentives, and soon at that."
"Immediately," growled Tylis, "with not a moment's delay. The prince orders. In this temple, I give the orders,"
interrupted Neneca in a cold, authoritative voice.
"I usually try to ensure my orders don't conflict too much with Herivard's politics, as far as those politics are logical and understandable. In this case, they are irrational, so I won't treat them any more seriously than they deserve. Geralt, Witcher of Rivia, is my guest. His stay is a pleasure to me, so he will stay in my temple for as long as he wishes."
"You have the audacity to contradict the prince, woman!"
Tylis shouted, then threw his cloak back over his shoulder to reveal his grooved, brass-edged breastplate in all its splendour.
"You dare to question our ruler's authority! Quiet!"
Neneca snapped and narrowed her eyes.
"Lower your voice. Have a care who you speak to like that."
"I know who I'm talking to."
The knight advanced a step. Fulwick, the older knight, grabbed him firmly by the elbow and squeezed until the armour-plated gauntlet grated. Tylis yanked furiously.
"And my words express the prince's will, the lord of this estate. We have got soldiers in the yard, woman."
Neneca reached into the purse at her belt and took out a small porcelain jar.
"I really don't know," she said calmly, "what will happen if I smash this container at your feet, Tylis. Maybe your lungs will burst, maybe you'll grow fur, or maybe both, who knows? Only merciful Melitela." "Don't dare threaten me with your spells, priestess! Our soldiers, if any one of your soldiers touches one of Melitela's priestesses, they will hang before dusk from the acacias along the road to town, and they know that very well. As do you, Tylis, so stop acting like a fool. I delivered you, you shitty brat, and I pity your mother, but don't
tempt fate. And don't force me to teach you manners.
All right, all right. The Witcher butted in, growing bored. It looks as though I'm becoming the cause of a serious conflict, and I don't see why I should. Sir Fulwick, you look more level-headed than your companion, who, I see, is beside himself with youthful enthusiasm. Listen, Fulwick, I assure you that I will leave in a few days. I also assure you that I have no intention to work here, to undertake any commissions or orders. I'm not here as a witcher, but on personal business.
Count Fulwick met his eyes, and Geralt realized his mistake. There was pure, unwavering hatred in the White Rose Knight's eyes. The Witcher was sure that it was not Duke Herivard who was chasing him out, but Fulwick and his like. The knight turned to Nenica, bowed with respect, and began to speak. He spoke calmly and politely. He spoke logically. But Geralt knew Fulwick was lying through his teeth.
"Venerable Nenica, I ask your forgiveness, but Prince Herivard will not tolerate the presence of this witcher on his lands. It is of no importance if he is hunting monsters or claims to be here on personal business. The prince knows that witchers do not undertake personal business, but they do attract trouble like a magnet filings. The wizards are rebelling and writing petitions. The druids are threatening. I don't see why Geralt should bear the consequences of the unruliness of local wizards and druids," interrupted the priestess. "Since when has Herivard been interested in either's opinion?"
"Enough of this discussion."
Fulwick stiffened.
"Have I not made myself sufficiently clear, Venerable Nenneke? I will make it so clear as can't be clearer. Neither the prince nor the chapter of the order will tolerate the presence of this witcher, Geralt, the Butcher of Blaviken, in Ellender for one more day."
"This isn't Ellender."
The priestess sprang from her chair.
"This is the Temple of Melitela, and I, Nenica, the High Priestess of Melitela, will not tolerate your presence on temple grounds a minute longer, sirs."
"Sir Fulwick," the Witcher said quietly, "listen to the voice of reason. I don't want any trouble, nor do I believe that you particularly care for it. I'll leave this neighbourhood within 3 days. No, Nenica, don't say anything, please. It's time for me to be on my way. 3 days. I don't ask for more."
"And you're right not to ask."
The priestess spoke before Fulwick could react.
"Did you hear, boys? The Witcher will remain here for 3 days, because that's his fancy, and I, Priestess of Great Melitela, will for those 3 days be his host, for that is my fancy. Tell that to Herivard. No, not Herivard. Tell that to his wife, the noble Ermelia, adding that if she wants to continue receiving an uninterrupted supply of aphrodisiacs from my pharmacy, she'd better calm her duke down. Let her curb his humours and whims, which look ever more like symptoms of idiocy."
"Enough!"
Tylis shouted so shrilly, his voice broke into a falsetto.
"I don't intend to stand by and listen as some charlatan insults my lord and his wife. I will not let such an insult pass unnoticed. It is the Order of the White Rose which will rule here now. It is the end of your nests of darkness and superstitions, and I, a knight of the White Rose..."
"Shut up, you brat,"
interrupted Geralt, smiling nastily.
"Halt your uncontrolled little tongue. You speak to a lady who deserves respect, especially from a knight of the White Rose. Admittedly, to become one it's enough lately to pay 1,000 Novigrad crowns into the chapter's treasury, so the order's full of sons of moneylenders and tailors. But surely some manners have survived. But maybe I'm mistaken."
Tylis grew pale and reached to his side.
"Sir Fulwick," said Geralt, not ceasing to smile, "if he draws his sword, I'll take it from him and beat the snotty-nosed little brat's arse with the flat of his blade, and then I'll batter the door down with him."
Tylis, his hands shaking, pulled an iron gauntlet from his belt and, with a crash, threw it to the ground at the witch's feet.
"I'll wash away the insult to the order with your blood, mutant," he yelled, "on beaten ground. Go into the yard."
"You've dropped something, son," Nenica said calmly. "So pick it up. We don't leave rubbish here. This is a temple. Fulwick, take that fool from here, or this will end in grief. You know what you're to tell Herivard, and I'll write a personal letter to him. You don't look like trustworthy messengers to me. Get out of here. You can find your way out, I hope."
Fulwick restraining the enraged Tylers with an iron grip, bowed, his armour clattering. Then he looked the Witcher in the eyes. The Witcher didn't smile. Falwick threw his crimson cloak over his shoulders.
"This wasn't our last visit, Venerable Neneker," he said. "We'll be back."
"That's just what I'm afraid of," replied the priestess coldly. "The displeasure's mine."
The Lesser Evil. Part 1. As usual, cats and children noticed him first. A striped tomcat, sleeping on a sun-warmed stack of wood, shuddered, raised his round head, pulled back his ears, hissed, and bolted off into the nettles. 3-year-old Dragomir, fisherman Trilia's son, who was sitting on the hut's threshold, doing his best to make dirtier an already dirty shirt, started to scream as he fixed his tearful eyes on the passing rider. The Witcher rode slowly, without trying to overtake the haycart obstructing the road. A laden donkey trotted behind him, stretching its neck and constantly pulling the cord tied to the Witcher's pommel tight. In addition to the usual bags, the long-eared animal was lugging a large shape wrapped in a saddlecloth on its back. The grey-white flanks of the ass were covered with black streaks of dried blood. The cart finally turned down a side street leading to a granary and harbour from which a sea breeze blew, carrying the stink of tar and ox's urine. Geralt picked up his pace. He didn't react to the muffled cry of the woman selling vegetables, who was staring at the bony, taloned paw sticking out beneath the horse blanket, bobbing up and down in time with the donkey's trot. He didn't look round at the crowd gathering behind him and rippling with excitement. There were, as usual, many carts in front of the alderman's house. Geralt jumped from the saddle, adjusted the sword on his back, and threw the reins over the wooden barrier. The crowd following him formed a semicircle around the donkey. Even outside, the alderman's shouts were audible.
"It's forbidden, I tell you, forbidden! God damn it! Can't you understand what I say, you scoundrel?"
Geralt entered. In front of the alderman, small, podgy and red with rage, stood a villager holding a struggling goose by the neck.
"What? By all the gods! Is that you, Geralt? Do my eyes deceive me?"
And turning to the peasant again,
"Take it away, you boor! Are you deaf?"
"They said," mumbled the villager, squinting at the goose, "that a wee something must be given to his lordship, otherwise—"
"Who said?"
yelled the alderman.
"Who? That I supposedly take bribes? I won't allow it, I say. Away with you! Greetings, Geralt."
"Greetings, Kildemain." The alderman squeezed the witch's hand, slapped him on the shoulder.
"You haven't been here for a good 2 years, Geralt, eh? You can never stay in one place for long, can you? Where are you coming from? Ah, dog's arse, what's the difference where? Hey, somebody bring us some beer. Sit down, Geralt, sit down. It's mayhem here, because we've the market tomorrow. How are things with you? Tell me."
"Later. Come outside first."
The crowd outside had grown twofold, but the empty space around the donkey hadn't grown any smaller. Geralt threw the horse blanket aside. The crowd gasped and pulled back. Kildemain's mouth fell open.
"By all the gods, Geralt! What is it?"
"A kikimora. Is there any reward for it?"
Kildemain shifted from foot to foot, looking at the spidery shape with its dry black skin, that glassy eye with its vertical pupil, the needle-like fangs in the bloody jaws.
"Where? From where?"
"On the dike, not some 4 miles from town. On the swamps. Kildemain, people must have disappeared there. Children."
"Well, yes, true enough. But nobody... who could have guessed? Hey, folks, go home, get back to work. This isn't a show. Cover it up, Geralt. Flies are gathering."
Back inside, the alderman grabbed a large jug of beer without a word and drank it to the last drop in one draught. He sighed deeply and sniffed.
"There's no reward," he said gloomily.
"No one suspected that there was something like that lurking in the salt marshes. It's true that several people have disappeared in those parts, but Well, hardly anyone loitered on that dyke. And why were you there? Why weren't you taking the main road?
It's hard for me to make a living on main roads, Caldermain.
I forgot.
The alderman suppressed a belch, puffing out his cheeks.
And this used to be such a peaceful neighbourhood. Even imps only rarely pissed in the women's milk. And here, right next to us, some sort of phallus spectre. It's only fitting that I thank you, because as for paying you, I can't. I haven't the funds.
That's a shame. I could do with a small sum to get through the winter.
The Witcher took a sip from his jug, wiped away the froth.
I'm making my way to Ispahan, but I don't know if I'll get there before the snow has blocked the way. I might get stuck in one of the little towns on the Latonsky Road.
Do you plan to stay long in Blaviken?
No, I've no time to waste. Winter's coming.
Where are you going to stay? With me, perhaps? There's an empty room in the attic. I get fleeced by the innkeepers, those thieves. We'll have a chat, and you can tell me what's happening in the big wide world.
Willingly. But what will Libusha have to say about it? It was quite obvious last time that she's not very keen on me.
Women don't have a say in my house. But, just between us, don't do what you did during supper last time in front of her again.
You mean when I threw my fork at that rat?
No, I mean when you hit it, even in the dark.
I thought it would be amusing.
It was. But don't do it in front of Libusha. And listen, this... what's it called? Kikimora. Do you need it for anything?
What would I want it for? You can have them throw it in the cesspool if there's no reward for it.
That's not a bad idea. Hey, Garelka, Borg, Caripebble, any of you there?
A town guard entered with a halberd on his shoulder, the blade catching the doorframe with a crash.
Caripebble, said Caldermain. Get somebody to help you, and take the donkey with that muck wrapped up in the horse blanket. Lead it past the pigsties and chuck the Kikimora in the cesspool. Understood?
At your command. But, Alderman, sir...
What?
Before we drown that hideous thing...
Well?
We could show it to Master Irion. It might be useful to him.
Caldermain slapped his forehead with his open palm.
You're not stupid, Gary Pebble. Listen, Geralt, maybe our local wizard will spare you something for that carcass. The fishermen bring him the oddest of fish. Octopedes, claybitters, or herons. Many have made some money on them. Come on, let's go to the tower.
You've got yourselves a wizard. Is he here for good or only passing?
For good? Master Irion. He's been living in Blaviken for a year. A powerful magus, Geralt. You'll see that from his very appearance.
I doubt whether a powerful magus will pay for a Kikimora, Geralt grimaced. As far as I know, it's not needed for any elixirs. Your Irion will only insult me, no doubt. We witches and wizards don't love each other.
I've never heard of Master Irion insulting anyone. I can't swear that he'll pay you, but there's no harm in trying. There might be more Kikimoras like that on the marshes, and what then? Let the wizard look at the monster and cast some sort of spell on the marshlands or something, just in case.
The Witcher thought for a moment.
Very well, Caldermain. What the heck? We'll risk a meeting with Master Irion. Shall we go?
We're off. Carry Pebble, chase the kids away and bring the floppy ears. Where's my hat?
Part 2. The tower, built from smoothly hewn blocks of granite and crowned by tooth-like battlements, was impressive, dominating the broken tiles of homesteads and dipping roofed thatched cottages.
He's renovated it, I see, remarked Geralt. With spells, or did he have you working at it?
Spells, chiefly.
What's he like, this Irion?
Decent. He helps people. But he's a recluse. Doesn't say much. He rarely leaves the tower.
On the door, which was adorned with a rosace inlaid with pale wood, hung a huge knocker in the shape of a flat, bulging-eyed fish head holding a brass ring in its toothed jaws. Caldermain, obviously well-versed with the workings of its mechanics, approached, cleared his throat, and recited...
Alderman Caldermain greets you with a case for Master Irion. With him greets you Witcher Geralt, with respect to the same case.
For a long moment, nothing happened. Then, finally,
The fish head moved its toothed mandibles and belched a cloud of steam.
"Master Irion is not receiving. Leave, my good people."
Kaldemain waddled on the spot and looked at Geralt. The witcher shrugged. Tarry Pebble picked his nose with serious concentration.
"Master Irion is not receiving,"
the knocker repeated metallically.
"Go, my good—"
"I'm not a good person," Geralt broke in loudly. "I'm a witcher. That thing on the donkey is a Kikimora, and I killed it not far from town. It is the duty of every resident wizard to look after the safety of the neighbourhood. Master Irion does not have to honour me with conversation, does not have to receive me, if that is his will. But let him examine the Kikimora and draw his own conclusions. Carry Pebble, unstrap the Kikimora and throw it down by the door."
"Geralt," the alderman said quietly, "you're going to leave, but I'm going to have to—"
"Let's go, Kaldemain. Carry Pebble, tear that finger out of your nose and do as I said."
"One moment," the knocker said, in an entirely different tone.
"Geralt, is that really you?"
The witcher swore quietly.
"I'm losing patience. Yes, it's really me. So what?"
"Come up to the door," said the knocker, puffing out a small cloud of steam. "Alone, I'll let you in."
"What about the Kikimora?"
"To hell with it. I want to talk to you, Geralt. Just you. Forgive me, Alderman."
"What's it to me, Master Irion?"
Kaldemain waved the matter aside.
"Take care, Geralt. We'll see each other later. Carry Pebble, into the cesspool with the monster."
"As you command."
The witcher approached the inlaid door, which opened a little bit, just enough for him to squeeze through, and then slammed shut, leaving him in complete darkness.
"Hey!"
he shouted, not hiding his anger.
"Just a moment," answered a strangely familiar voice.
The feeling was so unexpected that the witcher staggered and stretched out his hand, looking for support. He didn't find any. The orchard was blossoming with white and pink, and smelled of rain. The sky was split by the many-coloured arc of a rainbow, which bound the crowns of the trees to the distant blue chain of mountains. The house, nestled in the orchard, tiny and modest, was drowning in hollyhocks. Geralt looked down and discovered that he was up to his knees in thyme.
"Well, come on, Geralt," said the voice. "I'm in front of the house."
He entered the orchard walking through the trees. He noticed a movement to his left and looked round. A fair-haired girl, entirely naked, was walking along a row of shrubs carrying a basket full of apples. The witcher solemnly promised himself that nothing would surprise him any more.
"At last! Greetings, witcher!" "Stregobo!"
Geralt was surprised. During his life, the witcher had met thieves who looked like town councillors, councillors who looked like beggars, harlots who looked like princesses, princesses who looked like carving cows, and kings who looked like thieves. But Stregobo always looked as, according to every rule and notion, a wizard should look. He was tall, thin and stooping, with enormous bushy grey eyebrows and a long crooked nose. To top it off, he wore a black trailing robe with improbably wide sleeves and wielded a long staff capped with a crystal knob. None of the wizards Geralt knew looked like Stregobo. Most surprising of all was that Stregobo was, indeed, a wizard. They sat in wicker chairs at a white marble-topped table on a porch surrounded by hollyhocks. The naked blonde with the apple basket approached, smiled, turned, and, swaying her hips, returned to the orchard.
"Is that an illusion too?" asked Geralt, watching the sway.
"It is, like everything here. But it is, my friend, a first-class illusion. The flowers smell, you can eat the apples, the bee can sting you, and she—"
The wizard indicated the blonde.
"You can, maybe later."
"Quite right. What are you doing here, Geralt? Are you still toiling away, killing the last representatives of dying species for money? How much did you get for the Kikimora? Nothing, I guess, or you wouldn't have come here. And to think that there are people who don't believe in destiny. Unless you knew about me, did you?"
"No, I didn't. It's the last place I could have expected you. If my memory serves me correctly, you used to live in a similar tower in Corvair."
"A great deal has changed since then.
such as your name. Apparently you're Master Irion now.
That's the name of the man who created this tower. He died about 200 years ago, and I thought it right to honour him in some way since I occupied his abode.